Good morning and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, the recent research points to the fact that emotional and behavioral self-regulation in children are better predictors of adult success than IQ. Emotion coaching, developed by Dr. John Gottman, is based on the principle that with practice, children can learn to improve their emotional self-regulation and increase their emotional intelligence. Parents play a vital role in teaching and helping their children master these essential life skills. Please stay tuned with us for the next hour as Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell share with us this engaging and rewarding parenting approach that focuses on identifying and validating a child's feelings so they can learn the critical skill of managing their emotions in a way that promotes self-awareness and self-regulation. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you both taking the time to join me today.
Thank you, Prentice.
Okay. Want to remind folks, if you have any questions or comments about today's topic, we can be reached in Anchorage at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. Okay. Before we get started into emotion coaching, let's have each of you give us a little bit of your background, why you're in this particular area, what's interesting to you about this. Mandy, we can start with you.
Okay, hi. I am a licensed professional counselor here in Anchorage, and my interest in emotion coaching kind of spreads across a couple different domains for me. First, the interest has just come in as a parent. When I sent my kids to school for kindergarten as a five-year-old, I became acutely aware that my parenting magic of counting to three wasn't necessarily going to be as useful when they were out of my, you know, out of my home. And so I began to think more about where are they getting and learning these internal controls, these skills for self-management, for recognizing what's happening inside of them and learning how to control that and manage that. And so that first brought me to emotion coaching, finding this material and really needing it as a resource for me as a parent to begin to help engage in my child's emotional world in a productive way. Secondly, then just working in private practice with clients and just seeing that often as adults, that the same things I'm trying to teach my children and I'm learning myself, that these are really useful tools for us as adults, learning to manage our own emotions, identify and understand what is happening inside of me, so then I can make the best choices I want to make. And then thirdly, just the exciting new research just on well-being, you know, that's coming out with neuroscience and just understanding that people's ability to bounce back from adversity really is based on some key components of self-regulation and self-control. And so just knowing that we can help build into that in both our adult lives and our children's lives is a very exciting field to me and has brought a lot of interest for me in this.
All right, Wendy, how'd you get involved in this stuff?
Yeah, so I have a background in school counseling. I have a graduate degree in counseling psychology, and I've worked with military families and civilian families. Currently, I work in the community with crisis stabilization with the adolescent population. And what I've noticed when I'm working with these kiddos that are having trouble regulating or turning to negative coping skills in order to deal with big, uncomfortable feelings is that it's often has to do with how they have been coached by their parents to handle feelings and how important that working with families is in order to help children at the earliest age possible have the most success in life overall when you look at the whole child, not just emotionally and socially, but how that affects their intelligence academically later on. It's all connected.
And I just want to reinforce that idea because in the intro I said that self-regulation, the ability to regulate your emotions and your feelings and your behavior is more important for success as adults than IQ. And people say, well, it's so important to be, you know, smart and have this high intelligence. But the research shows that people who can manage it and regulate their behavior and these, you know, it's like a thermostat, right? And in a house, you don't let it go to 100 degrees and then back down to 50, it has a regulation system in it that keeps it at a certain spot. And while it goes up and down and fluctuates, it does not have massive swings. And that's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's learned. That's learned through modeling, and that's learned through skills.
We're going to talk a lot about modeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Later on. All right. Let's define some terms. I think I just defined self-regulation, the ability to manage one's own feelings and behavior and understand them. What's emotional intelligence? What's EQ? Okay. We talk a lot about IQ, right? But what's EQ?
Emotional intelligence is basically emotional regulation plus social relationships. And so emotional regulation being the ability to understand feelings and to manage them. And then social relationships is getting along, you know, with adults and with children. And so those are the two key components that make up that measure of emotional intelligence.
It's the difference between, I think of emotional intelligence as like, what is anger? What is frustration? What, you know, the little feelings chart that we used to get, and then you'd have it with all the little faces, and you stick it to the mirror, and it identifies all the different faces for your feelings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of understanding it. Anything else for emotional intelligence?
Well, it's also what to do with it once you know what it is. So it's not only being able to recognize what the emotion is, but also choosing the behavior or choosing how to respond to this emotion that you're experiencing. And that gets learned, too.
How do I solve this problem constructively and without tearing apart the house or punching a hole in the wall? Okay.
For those people that were like a real technical definition, you know, I can tell you that emotional intelligence is being able to identify and understand your own emotions, understand and empathize with another person's feelings, and respond to emotions with appropriate behavior in a cooperative, functional, and empathetic manner. And what adult is not still trying to learn that? That's not something that we're looking for kids to have mastery in, but this is the ongoing target for us to grow in this way. There is great evidence now that that this is a value, that this is not just, you know, some soft science. This is a hard science now that's really understood that your emotional intelligence really impacts your success in life and your happiness, really.
So this isn't just sort of a granola philosophy where you want to validate all your child's feelings. And I mean, this has some science behind how it creates healthier, better functioning adults.
Yes, lots of science, lots of exciting science in the past two decades, I'd say.
A big piece of this is mindfulness. That's one of the things we throw around a lot as far as like mindfulness, and you hear that on the radio, and there's lots of books on it, and Siegel and a lot of these folks talk about mindfulness. What is mindfulness for somebody who might not be familiar with that term?
So mindfulness is the ability to be in the present moment, to be aware of what's happening within you, around you, not thinking about what you had to do this morning or what you have to do later on today. That moment of being totally in the present and totally aware. And that's also a skill. So it's not something that comes natural to people. It's something that you can build a skill around. And the more mindful you can be, and mindfulness is not just sitting and meditating. It's also mindfully moving through the hallway or noticing what sense you're experiencing or what you're seeing visually. It's a way to ground yourself in the present through your senses as well. So the better you get at being mindful in the moment, the more opportunity you have to notice what emotions you're experiencing and how you want to respond to them too.
It's about knowing and being where you are.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One of the best examples for this emotional sort of intelligence, I think, is anger is a really useful tool for just a quick moment, right? Anger's easy to do. It's easy to get angry, but it's hard to get angry in the right way, for the right amount of time, for the right reason, at the right person or thing, right? Mm-hmm. So anger is just designed to come in, eliminate whatever threat is there, and then it's supposed to dissipate. But when it stays and it spills over, that's the lack of emotional regulation. Mm-hmm. That's the lack of your ability to self-regulate.
Yeah, I think that's a good example.
Okay. I guess let's go, what is emotion coaching? Because that's just a term, emotion coaching.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that even mean the first time I saw it? Like, do we have a playbook? Do we have, I mean, there are rules, right? There are, it's something that can be taught. So emotion coaching.
Yeah, good question. Emotion coaching is a term that was coined by Drs. John and Julie Gottman. So it is a five-step research-based method that helps teach children to regulate their behavior and their emotions. You may, many listeners may have heard of them just from their renowned work with couples, lots of books on couples. But before John Gottman was in that work, he spent 20 years working in the field of developmental psychology, studying the emotional lives of children. And he studied parents and children in a very detailed laboratory and followed children as they developed over a decade. And after a decade of research, his team encountered a group of parents who did five very simple things with their children. I say simple, but not easy.
So these are five things that he's identified as skills that successful parents or parents who had the best outcomes engaged in.
Yes, with their children. And they called these things emotion coaching. Emotion coaching parents had children that later became what Daniel Goleman called emotionally intelligent people. So children who were emotion coached were more resourced in how to handle their emotions, particularly when they were upset. They could calm their heart rate faster, which led to healthier bodies and lower infectious diseases. They got sick less often. They were better at focusing their attention. They related better to other people, even in tough social situations. And they had better academic progress. So that's what it is and why it matters. And then we'll get in a little bit later to what the steps of emotion coaching are, kind of what the target is we're aiming for and how to engage in our children in this way.
Okay, you mentioned the five success or the characteristics of parents who were good at this. I guess we say good.
Yeah.
Can we go through some of those, just the five steps real quick and talk briefly about each of those?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to add just before that emotion coaching, you know, just kind of more in an introductory way that we give kids the skills they need to succeed in practically every area of life, that we teach them how to do math, how to read, how to write, how to solve problems. They learn this, they practice this, they perform this. And so with emotion coaching, with social emotional learning, what we're teaching and what we're modeling and showing to children is basically how to handle what is happening inside of them, that this is what this is about. And so we cannot do that first without awareness. Emotion coaching parents believe that all feelings and wishes are acceptable, but not all behavior is permissible. And that the regulation of emotion comes through the understanding of emotions, not by suppressing it. And emotional regulation begins with awareness. So the first step of emotion coaching is to be aware of your child's emotions. That's it. Be aware of your child's emotions, that feelings fuel behavior. And we really can't do that first without some awareness of ourselves. So as Wendy talked about, mindfulness, having present time awareness and some awareness just of what's happening inside of me is a crucial and critical tool to even begin to be able to engage with my child's emotions in a healthy and constructive way. So emotion coaching parents, they value negative emotions as a chance for intimacy. They can tolerate difficult emotions. They respect their child's feelings and take time to listen, empathize, guide, set limits, and teach. And so the first step of just being aware of your child's emotions is really important. There's different types of parenting and first understanding maybe what is my bent with parenting towards emotions. What was the way I was parented with regards to, you know, anger, joy, fear, sadness. The ways that I was parenting is often imprinting the way that then I'm engaging with this emotion in my children. And so just that awareness of myself is really important. The Gottmans identified four different kind of styles of parenting with regards to emotions.
All right.
The first one being emotionally dismissive, then emotionally disapproving, the laissez-faire parent, and then the emotion coaching parent. And what they saw was that emotion dismissing and disapproving parents saw negative emotions as toxic. If a child isn't happy, it's seen as a reflection of that parent. If a child says they're afraid or scared, that parent might say, "You're fine," or "Let me distract you from that." You know, they may even go as far as to communicate, what's wrong with you? Other people don't feel this way. You know, your brother or sister isn't struggling with that. That would be disapproving. The laissez-faire parent believes that all emotions are acceptable. They offer comfort, they offer empathy, they offer validation, which is so good, but they fail to see the opportunity to teach and to set limits, which is very important as well.
So just anything goes is the laissez-faire.
Yeah.
Sort of like whatever they're feeling, just roll with it and don't help them learn to regulate and rein that back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's an important component. I think what you mentioned earlier is parents developing and learning and educating themselves about these emotions. Because if we can't regulate our own emotions and we can't recognize our own feelings and why we're feeling what we're feeling and how to regulate it, how can we possibly teach? Or should it be like teaching, like me trying to teach pre-algebra to my junior high kid?
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember.
Right.
I don't know how. I could probably learn it. And that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Is that this stuff is available and there's lots of information out there. And we have some lots of good resources on our website at Line One. So I want to get into a little bit more. So.
Okay.
The five steps. We got aware of your child emotions.
Yeah.
Recognize what's going on and what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Ask questions. Go ahead.
Okay, step two, recognize emotions as an opportunity to connect and to teach. And so for this step, your expectations have to match their abilities, which are determined by their biological and their developmental age. A child can only manage what they understand. And so that's going to vary and naturally grow with their age. Emotion coaching parents see all feelings and wishes as acceptable, but not all behavior is permissible. So the point here is first that you have to see emotions and make a connection before you teach. It actually goes a lot further if I can first see in my child, what are the feelings behind this behavior? And that's going to open my eyes as a parent to see before I get to the lecture, before I get to the lesson, before I get to the advice and what you need to know, to make a connection. This is huge. To recognize emotions as an opportunity to connect and then to teach. And so for different ages, and I think you have a link provided for that too, just knowing where is my child developmentally? What are they capable of understanding or not? You know, what is their vocabulary? Working with kids in their own words. And that goes into step three, which is helping your child verbally label emotions. That children need words, that to name it is to tame it, as Dan Siegel says, you know, when the hand brain model, when I'm offline, when my lid is flipped, that actually just finding words, I'm really upset now, I'm really mad now, that helps to calm my system. And so helping the child find words for how they feel and let it be their words. Give them, help build into your child a vocabulary, a rich vocabulary for emotions. Play games with them. When you're reading a book, you know, just wonder. I wonder how that character felt, you know, or how do you feel when that happens to you? Just building in emotional vocabulary. You cannot manage what you don't understand. So we're trying to build into our children understanding of a wide breadth of emotions. The fourth step is communicating empathy and understanding. And this is the human clincher, empathy. It's the key that can soften any human heart, no matter how big or small or hard or soft. And this can be tricky because the key to express empathy is not to solve the problem or to give advice. And here with empathy too, it's simply to hear what your child says and to imagine what your child is feeling and then to acknowledge what he said. It does not mean agreement, does not mean that it's okay what you did, but it's okay how you feel.
It's just validating that as your feelings are not wrong.
Yes, your feelings are not wrong.
All right, if you're just tuning into the program, today we are discussing emotion coaching with Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell. If you have a question or a comment for my guest today, please don't hesitate to call in or email. Our Anchorage phone number is 550-8433. You can call us toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And our email is the last way you can reach us. That's line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll turn to our conversation about emotion coaching. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your co-host for today's program, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, we're discussing emotion coaching with Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell. Right before the break, we were talking a little bit about empathy and understanding, and I think empathy is an important thing for people to understand. It's more than just sympathy. It's more than, oh, yeah, you look like you're feeling bad. I'm sorry about that. It's really getting into and sitting with your child and feeling their feelings, all right? Yeah. Want to remind folks that we are a call-in show. Our Anchorage number is 550-8433. You can tell us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752 and email us your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, so the fifth step, we had awareness of your child emotions, number one. Number two, recognizing emotions as opportunities to teach and connect to your children to really get down and understand what's going on with them. Help your child with limits labeling their emotions, identifying them and labeling, communicating empathy and understanding. The last one, set limits and problem solving. You said emotions are okay, whatever they are. How do you set limits around, mm-hmm. What do you mean by limits?
Okay. So sometimes you don't even have to get to this step. Sometimes you do. You know, so I want to go back and emphasize just that how powerful that empathy is. Because often when we're experiencing really strong or overwhelming or upsetting emotions, our thinking is not all there. You know, we're not remembering what's worked before. We're not as creative and flexible about how to solve a problem. So this empathy step is huge. That it really can help get you into a way where maybe the child is even able to just naturally right the wrong that was done, you know, or recognize their part in a problem. And so sometimes you get to step five, sometimes you don't need to. I mean, Gottman say that 40%, 95% of the time, emotion coaching is about understanding and empathy, that actually solves the problem in and of itself, that children will self-correct, that children will regain a sense of flexibility, that they in turn through empathy learn to treat others with the same compassion and understanding. So when we model that for our children, it's huge. Then setting limits and problem solving. This is what's important here is that we don't rush to this step, because again, sometimes you don't have to. Especially with younger children, it's often enough to show understanding. You know, kids fall down, they run over to you, they're hurt, they tell you what happened. You say, okay, you know, I see you're hurt. They run off and start playing again. You know, that's often just that sense of they feel felt with you and they run off.
Right.
They're back on with their friend and it's fine. But when we do need to problem solve, it's very important to collaborate with our child in this process. You may need to communicate your emotions with your child, communicate what is acceptable and what is not, clarify the values and the rules in your family. Remembering here that to discipline means to teach. And so when there's misbehavior, we have to ask ourselves, what does my child need to learn and how can I help facilitate this? We look for where they might not have a skill. We look for where there's a reoccurring problem or challenge, and how can I help them to succeed? And so, that's sometimes we're addressing misbehavior. There's things we want to avoid in doing that. And that's very, you know, that's a very important piece to get to, what to avoid when we're addressing misbehavior
right.
with kids. And maybe mm-hmm. Wendy wants to talk
about that. And so the Gottmans have identified four particular ways to avoid addressing misbehavior. And this also...
So this is what not to do.
This is what not to do.
Okay.
This is what to avoid. And this can really be applied to other relationships, too, of spouses.
What
who
not
might
to
be
do
in
your
conflict.
Marriage. If you could give everybody those tips right now.
Put it on
or
the refrigerator.
Friendships. When you're dealing with addressing misbehavior, you know, having already made that connection with the child, having that stress hormone cortisol be decreasing in the brain, having the child be co-regulating with you and in a place where that prefrontal cortex is working again and they're able to start to think through things, you're able to problem solve with them. And so it might be a natural place that these things won't be happening. However, we as parents who are rushed many times during the day and just want to get to the heart of the matter, you know, we need to make time for this emotion coaching. And so some things to be aware of to avoid in all of our parental efforts is one, criticism, pointing out anything negative in your child, blaming them for a problem by naming his or her personality flaws, making it a personal criticism, not just speaking of their behavior, but linking it to who they are as people.
Like, why are you acting like such a baby? Or this isn't, why are you making a big deal out of nothing? What's wrong with you? Those kind of statements can be, I have found that I can either take a parenting opportunity and escalate a situation, or I can de-escalate it depending on how I enter it.
Yes.
All right. So the first one is the criticism. Mm-hmm. Getting back to those four, they call the four horsemen.
The four horsemen.
Yeah. Of the apocalypse.
Yeah. The relationship killers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These things. Doesn't matter their relationship. Criticism.
Criticism. Yeah. And kiddos take criticism as a way of reflecting who they are.
Right.
And they really hold on to that. There bears a great imprint that we can leave on them with it. Defensiveness. A reaction against feeling personally attacked. The opposite of that would be taking responsibility.
Right.
And that's pretty natural for us to want to defend ourselves. So our emotional regulation in response to a situation, if our own kiddo triggers us, is really important, that awareness of how we're going to respond.
I've found that one of my best parenting tools is my ability to apologize to my children, to go in to say, hey, dad didn't make, I didn't make the best intervention there. That wasn't my best parenting moment. And my kids are like, oh, it's okay, dad. And I'm like, nah, I got to do better.
Yeah.
Right. And they seem to appreciate that.
Yeah. Being authentic with our own feelings with our kids and then apologizing and redoing and trying to fix the situation. There's no shame in that.
No, if you blow up too big to say I didn't do a very good job of regulating my anger there.
Yeah. They learn that it's okay to make mistakes through that and that you're committed to them.
It's good modeling.
It's
great powerful. Modeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know.
Right. You're doing good, Princess.
Same here. Third one is contempt.
Yeah.
Sarcasm, but worse. Looking down on someone from a place of superiority. It can be the most destructive of all the behaviors or ways that we can respond. So the antidote to that would be building a culture of appreciation, speaking from a place of recognizing what you appreciate as opposed to sarcastically responding. And then there's stonewalling, a reaction in which the listener withdraws from the interaction and is totally silent, just doesn't have any response at all. It's a way to shut out stimulation when feeling attacked or when there's too much stimulation. And so the opposite of that would be to try to be physiologically self-soothing, to really be present and to offer some way to self-soothe and letting a person in that way.
Yeah, a child that has an absence of a reaction may be more upset than the child that's blowing up. You don't really know, you know, until these labs where they're putting heart rate monitors on people, and you can really see that what's happening on the inside is not always reflected on what's happening on the outside. And so being aware of the absence of emotion, too, with my child doesn't necessarily mean the absence of a really strong reaction that's happening inside.
Yeah, it reminds me of Dr. Detweiler, who I worked with for a while ago, had this. He was big into biofeedback, and one of the things that taught you is, you know, wire people up, and then expose them to emotions and watch their physiology go up and down. And by them watching it and seeing their heart rate go up and learning to then have more positive thoughts, they could actually physically see the regulation, see it coming back down.
Yeah,
that's kind of the old school way of what you're talking about is that awareness, that understanding of learning to, you know, like I think of the monks who can regulate their heart rate, who can like slow their breathing to a certain, you know, like you're almost dead.
Yeah. Yeah, the research around heart rate variability, right. You know, is so interesting and in how it shows you. And we can do this at home. You know, I can hook up my little heart rate monitor and be guided and see that when I'm experiencing a positive rejuvenative motion, such as curiosity or happiness, joy, love, that it actually is affecting the rhythms of my heart, that it's putting my whole body in more of a place of coherence, of synchrony, that's opening up my mind, is helping my thinking. When I then hold on to a thought, you know, or emotion of frustration, of anger, even of boredom, right. that moves my whole rhythms of my heart, you know, which the process in every area of my body to less of a place of health. And so again, when we're aware of what's happening, then I have more tools to manage that. And there's so many tools to build into that awareness now.
All right. I want to remind listeners, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm Prentice Pemberton. We are talking today about emotion coaching. And we just talked about the four strategies that can ruin any good relationship, right? Which is criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. We went through those things, and those are some of the Gottman's gifts to relationships. So going a little bit deeper into like our role with our children in this and our own self-awareness, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, because what I have found in my practice, and I think, Mandy, that's what you mentioned off the air, is what kind of got you interested in this, is you're doing this teaching. We're all doing it in our office with 30 and 40 and 50 year olds who have children, right? And who are just learning about this and now understanding how that is passed down, that dysregulation to their children. And this isn't a parent blaming moment, because we stay far away from that. We all do the best we can and with what we got. But where do we as parents learn this stuff? I mean, we're having a shift, I think, culturally in this awareness of our emotions and the science behind emotions. And I think that's what all this research into the ACEs programs, the adverse childhood experiences, and those connections to mental health problems as adults. There's a direct line correlation, the more exposure you have to adverse experiences. And one of the things that I've found in my practice that's worked really well is I shift from more of this Freudian kind of like go down deep into your inner child, but really is like speaking to people about what's happening in their brain when they're getting anxious. Mm-hmm. And I can have people in my office have anxiety, a panic attack, just by talking about something. And then we can shift the conversation and I can watch them like de-escalate and regulate, and those emotions come down. And the trick is to teach them to do that themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how important, what should parents do if they want to get into this with their kids? Where do you start?
Yeah, you start with yourself. And that is, you know, when I found this material, this emotion coaching material from the Gottmans, I was excited to start applying it in my family and with my kids, but I early and very quickly saw that I have to be applying this with myself first. And I see this with clients too. When I'm teaching parents about this, and I always say it has to start with you. It has to start from the inside out, that you only go as far with your children as you're willing to go with yourself.
I can't remember who said it or how they said it, but something about if you want the change in your child, first look at, are you capable of that change yourself?
Yeah.
Is it Rogers or I don't remember who. It's not coming to me. But
so I think for many adults, I think for many humans, there's two tendencies when it comes to emotions, and particularly hard to handle ones, you know, and that's some intentional language with that. Not that there's bad feelings, but there's hard to handle ones. There's ones
difficult
my body
feelings,
likes to have. There's ones that don't feel so good in my body. And so with those hard to handle ones, there's really two tendencies. I mean, one is to suppress that, to dismiss that, to deny that. And me, I don't want to feel that. That's painful. That's hard. I'm going to swallow that. Tuck that deep inside of me. We know the drill. And then I'd say another reaction could be that I'm going to just be engulfed by that, you know, that I am my anger, that I am my sadness, that I am my emotions, versus it's something that I have. So I think emotion coaching for us as adults, when we apply this with ourselves and even in our relationships, that it's a really helpful construct to give us the tool to see emotions, to be aware of them, to see them as opportunity to connect and teach, first within myself, to first express empathy and validation, to not be so judgmental and critical of myself. If I want to not be that way with my kid as much. I need to start not being that way with myself so much when I mess up, you know, when I make a mistake, when I'm not succeeding in the way I want to. And so how I am to myself in those moments, that's really where it starts.
Showing yourself some compassion and understanding and empathy. I said to my 10-year-old or my 8-year-old the other day when she was angry at herself, and I'm so stupid and there's something wrong with my brain and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, honey, what happens if you have friends who are mean to you and they say mean things? And she says, well, I don't like that. And I say, and how do you feel about them? Well, I'm mad at them and I don't like them. And I said, if they just kept being mean to you, she's like, well, I wouldn't be their friend. And then her eyes got big and she was like, oh, this means I have to be nicer to myself or I won't like myself. Mm-hmm. And that was like,
aha. Yeah.
A moment for her.
This
Beautiful.
Moment. And I keep trying to revisit that when she gets frustrated to the point where she's starting to beat up on herself. And we just go back to talking about what are the strengths and, you know, what is this frustration? This is just a temporary thing that you can, we use other examples of times that she's overcome adversity and been resilient and continued to push through things.
That's a great story. You know, Daniel Goleman says that family life is our first school for emotional learning. And so here in our family, how I'm teaching my child through their frustration, through their disappointment, through their anger, how to be with themselves in that is what they're going to take with them out into the world when they're not with you any longer, and how they're going to be with other people in that. And so really seeing that opportunity to do that work from the inside out with your child is powerful.
If your kids are fighting and one of them screams and throws something and has a fit and they're yelling and fighting, the tendency is just to come in and say, go to your room, split up, stop doing that.
Yeah.
What's a better way, if we're talking about emotion coaching, how would you go in and de-escalate that situation, real life? Like, how would you go in real time and do that as a parent?
Yeah. Well, that brings up an important topic about what emotion coaching is and what it isn't.
Okay.
That is not a form of discipline. However, the more you emotion coach, maybe the less you need to discipline. It's intended to be used when there is an opportunity for connection. And that's hard to do when your child or you have flipped your lid.
And by flipping lid, this is let's define that term for people who might not be familiar with it. It's from Siegel's brain model.
Yeah,
and what does that mean?
Google hand brain model and watch his
really
video
good.
On that. Kids take to that so well. It's such a great tool. And so that's that sense that when I'm experiencing when my stress response is activated in my body, I'm experiencing a really strong emotion of anger or fear, that in a sense I don't have access to my whole brain. You know, that I don't have access to my memory, to my problem solving, to flexibility, to remembering what worked before and what could help me get through this situation. That you can't even come up with new ideas in that moment. You have to calm down first. You have to calm down first. So in a moment where your child has flipped their lid or you have, that's not in a moment. That's not a time that you're going to be able to necessarily connect and teach. There has to be some calming down first, which for, one of the best opportunities we have as parents with young children is for co-regulation. And so that is a sense that my calm can become their calm.
Okay.
You know?
So in that example, you might come in but you would be calm. You would not escalate yourself. You would come and separate and then all the process. You're aware of your child's emotions. They're angry. Yeah. You recognize the emotions as opportunities to teach and connect. So you connect with your kid around that frustration, around their anger at their sibling. It's really hard when your brother takes your stuff.
They may be able to hear that in the moment. They may not. You may just have to get to safety first.
Right,
you may just have to separate. Yeah, when your child's throwing a tantrum, when you're in the middle of a store, not times that you're going to be able to really have much of a connection. I think that safety, you know, is always first. And do we need to separate? Do we need to calm down? And then we can come back to this situation and we can be curious, what was going on for you? What were you feeling there? That must have been really tough. I can understand how you'd feel that way, that's where the learning would come in. But the key for the parent to remember in that moment, and again, 40% of the time, if I cannot flip my lid when my child flips the lid, that's awesome.
All right. To sum up the flipping of the lid, it's really when your frontal lobe, you know, the critical, the frontal cortex is offline, right? I say if you're angry and your lid flips, it means you're acting on your primitive brain.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
It's those raw, reactive, intense emotions. And when you're in that state, you're not thinking.
Yeah.
You're critical thinking. So as parents, for me, the importance of not flipping my lid is the only way.
Yeah.
When I'm acting off anger and frustration in a primitive way, I'm not teaching.
Yes.
And connecting.
Yeah.
All right. If you're just tuning into the program, we're discussing emotion coaching with Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell. If you have a question or a comment about today's topic, don't hesitate to call in or email. Hopefully we can get to a few phone calls if you have questions in the last 10 or 15 minutes. You can call us in Anchorage at 550-8433. You can reach us statewide or anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton. This is Line One, your health connection.
Funding for Line One, Your Health Connection, was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, we're discussing emotion coaching and emotional regulation with Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell. Our local phone number, if you want to participate, is 550, that's the Anchorage area, 8433. Statewide, we're at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read an email that we got, which I think is relevant. Says, can you give parents some suggestions on how to deal with the emotions and fear and anxiety due to the November 30 earthquake? A lot of parents are struggling with getting their children to sleep in their own beds again, separation anxiety, the aftershocks. How do we set healthy limits while still hearing these emotions in our kids? It's great. Great question. Super relevant.
Great question.
Yeah. I got an 8-year-old that has a panic attack every time, like super high anxiety about this. And there's a lot of adults that are dealing with it too.
Yeah.
But for kids, parents, how do we talk to our children about this stuff?
Yeah.
There's such an opportunity to talk about emotional regulation
based
off of this event and the reoccurring aftershocks that we're experiencing. We're getting to return to the emotion that it brings up over and over again with these aftershocks, and able to practice with our kiddos in the moment how to regulate those emotions in response. So although it is a difficult time, it is a great opportunity for us as parents to help educate and use this exact method and these steps.
All right, so let's go through the steps with it. How would you emotion coach, you know, the aftershocks, the fear with aftershocks that's happening? I mean, one, just recognize, being aware of your child's emotions. That is wonderful.
Very scary to be little and to have the whole thing shaking. You're not with your parents. There's people running around. Things are falling off the ceiling at school or things I heard of. Kids are getting missed by tiles falling. I mean, it's a new experience, right? And it's a very real experience. This isn't a irrational fear,
right?
Especially for people that have never been through it. So your kids, that's the first step, being aware.
Being aware, and being aware of your emotions as a parent and as an adult. If you're still experiencing a lot of anxiety, maybe look into getting some help for yourself right now. What are some things that could help me with that? Because again, they're going to feed off my nervous system. So how can my calm become their calm?
Mm-hmm.
It can't if I'm not calm. So it's important to recognize with yourself. If I'm still experiencing a really heightened level of anxiety, panic with aftershocks, probably need to get some help for myself first. And there's lots of resources out there.
Mm-hmm. And learning how to containerize those emotions so you can attend to your child's needs in the moment, if that's possible
containerize,
for you.
What does that mean?
That's a great word.
Yeah.
It's new. I don't think it is a word. But
I like it, though.
Yeah.
Well, you imagine, if you can visualize, you can imagine a container and being able to just place your emotions in that container.
Let's put these over here for a moment.
Yeah, let's just put it someplace so I can attend to my child and their needs, and then I can return to it later on.
Yeah.
But that's a skill in and of itself us as parents and adults to build.
And then we have to learn to go back to that container mm-hmm. with a supportive adult. So is that a therapist? Is that my spouse? Is that a friend?
Mm-hmm.
So that number one, recognizing the emotion that's present for you and for your child. Number two, seeing it as an opportunity to teach and connect. So that's wonderful, to avoid dismissing, denying, or disapproving this, but to just ask your child, lean into it a little bit. You know, what does that feel like for you right now? How are you feeling right now? When did it start?
Where do you feel it?
Where do you feel it in your mm-hmm. body?
That's a
so
great
all
question.
All of our emotions are felt in our body before we even have a word for that. And so just as that fear and that anxiety can be in my body, I can also bring calm to those areas. So I've worked with a lot of kids post-earthquake, and the first thing that I've done is just kind of given them, one, just some information that when a really big, scary event happens, that our bodies are so amazing because it will mobilize all this energy. That's our stress response.
To protect us,
to mm-hmm. try to bring us to safety and do the safest thing possible in that moment.
Mm-hmm. The flight or fight response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes that kind of gets stuck in our body, and we're still feeling a lot of that shakiness and a lot of that that pent-up energy from what happened. And so for some kids, they were able to find natural ways to release that and find balance again. Maybe they slept a lot post-earthquake. Maybe they played a lot. Maybe I had one child that just wouldn't stop talking for days. It just seemed to be talking nonstop post-earthquake. Yeah. Another one that just wanted to stay on the couch and just read and be calm. Children naturally find a way to find balance again. But if your child isn't, if you're seeing they seem a little stuck, that they're really returning to this place of panic, you know, again, it might be time to find a little more help, to go see a therapist, to go ask for help from a professional.
Right.
But as a parent, one, just recognizing the opportunity to teach and connect, you know, that there's nothing wrong with your child because they're feeling this way. It's not because they've done something wrong or they're doing anything wrong. You want to help them understand what's happening in their body. Where do they feel that? And then maybe even ask a question like, would there be anything that could help make that hard to have feeling or that fear a little smaller? Children have the
right.
best ideas, and so listen to their ideas because it might be much more simple than our solution, you know. Yeah.
All right. If you're just joining us, we're discussing emotion coaching with Anchorage therapist Mandy Casarella and Wendy Caldwell. We had a great question about earthquakes and how to talk to kids about that, how to get them back into their rooms. One of the things that you mentioned, like an opportunity to teach and connect. That's one of the things I've had success with my child is we've educated about earthquakes.
Yeah.
What does it mean? How well is the city built for these earthquakes based on, you know, the big one we had back, you know, in the 60s? And that has been helpful to educate. And I talked about the earthquake using metaphors and stories. I talked about the earth needing to wiggle.
Mm.
And that's what my daughter, you know, I said, you know how you need to wiggle and run and you get so much energy that you just can't, and my feet can't stay still, Daddy. That's kind of how the earth gets. Mm-hmm. Just got to wiggle a little bit. And sometimes the wiggles are bigger than other wiggles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that, but it is important to validate that fear that it's got to be really scary. So connecting and teaching,
So I'll add one thing to that is that that I've been teaching classrooms and with kids after the earthquake has been that we have to communicate. Sometimes our body is staying, particularly with the aftershocks, back to that really stressed place and thinking that I need to find safety and that fight or flight response is activated again. And so we can communicate safe messages to our body. And probably the quickest way we can do that is through our breath. So teaching kids some deep breathing things to calm those big feelings. And then secondly, how to work with their thoughts. So sometimes when we have really big, scary things that happen, our thoughts get really stuck on big, scary things. And that's okay. You cannot control your first thought or your first feeling, but you can influence your second. So you can give yourself a kind thought. I was with a group of kids right after the earthquake in a classroom, and it was amazing to bring them back into the center of this room.
Like right when it happened.
Right when it happened. You know, a group of three.
You're at school.
At school, under the desk.
Doing social emotional learning.
Was planning on it. Yeah. The plan got disrupted that day. Under the desk with the kids, you know, back out into the middle of their group area, then back under the desk, and then back out to the middle of their group area, you know, with the aftershocks. And we gathered back, you know, the teacher gathered the students back into the middle of this area, and I had the kids just ground themselves for a minute. So when you have a big scary thing happen, your mind and your body kind of stays up there with that big scary thing. So we very quickly did an exercise that we just call 4-3-2-1, And that is just grounding our senses. So, and you can do this at home with your child. So
that's the mindful piece, right?
Yeah, where this is the mindfulness.
Are we okay?
Yes, I want to communicate a safe message to my body because it's still feeling really unsafe right now. So I'm going to look around. I'm going to find four blue or green things in this room. And then I'm going to take a breath. And then I'm going to listen for three sounds around me. And then I'm going to take a breath. And then I'm just going to just notice two breaths. And then I'm going to give myself one kind and true thought. These are all ways to calm my body, to calm my senses, that help kind of reduce that anxiety. And so then I ask the kids to share those thoughts. What is a kind and true thought? And this is where kids are so special. They are our best teachers in so many ways. They said beautiful things to each other like, I am so glad to be here with you. You are so brave. You did so good, you know. You're okay. And they were saying these things to themselves and saying these things to each other. And you just saw their bodies just relax. And I told them, you may need to go home and just keep doing this. And remember, these are ways that you can communicate safe words, safe thoughts, and safe feelings to your body when it's still feeling really afraid. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also like to really, and the work I've done with kids after the earthquake is to talk about what they did that helped to increase their safety, right? Where was your power? And, you know, what did you do to keep yourself safe? Well, we went under the table and we found an adult, and then my parents came and got me, you know, and then we went home. And so to access their sense of power around their own ability to protect themselves, especially for the teenagers, they seem to have some relief from that. Like, yes, I do have some power to make myself safe, and I can't control everything, but there are certain things I can control.
Yeah. And let them keep telling their story. I mean, I had to call my brother to say, can you call my kids and just let them tell you their story?
Okay. You know, that's
because
a great idea.
They just
somebody
needed
besides
to
you.
Keep, right. They needed to keep telling their story, and it's not going to be forever, but you know, still 2 weeks after, they needed to keep telling their story, and that's helping them make meaning. That's helping them make sense of things. It's helping them work through it. You know, that's part of it. Draw pictures. Act it out again if they need to. I mean, that's, you know, that's a form of therapy. You know, role play it. Act it through. What did you do? What would you have done different? What do you wish you could have done? You know, to keep kind of working it through their system, working it out.
There's a lot of kids sleeping on floors.
We still have the mattress in my room.
I know. And, you know, one of the things that I think I've had a couple of parents do that has been helpful is ask their kid, when do you want to go back to your room? Like, what would be a good time? Because it is a realistic fear, and the shakes keep happening. And what can we do? Can we put a monitor in your room so that if you get woken up, that we can come running?
Yeah.
You know, what are some things? And what is their goal around doing that?
Yeah.
They will have some amazing ideas.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Like, collaborate with them in the problem solving. So that's problem solving, and that's not just my agenda, but there's two agendas here, taking your kids' agenda into account, too.
All right, we do have a phone call, and I want to go to that before we run out of time here today. So, Carol, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Thanks so much, Prentice, for having this show and inviting your guests. I am not a parent. I am a teacher with the Anchorage School District, and I am listening with rapt attention because my observation, it's not a question, it's just an observation. I am a substitute teacher. This is my fourth year, and I am observing, to my own small slice of a survey, every single year it seems that we are getting more children coming into the school system at the various earliest ages, kindergarten, with more and more emotional, I don't know what the right word is, but it's draining for teachers. It drains time, it drains energy, it stops the process of teaching. And so, for instance, if you approach a kindergarten child at the beginning of the year to maybe redirect a behavior, and he has a very angry look on his face and growls at you, that's disturbing behavior. And I don't know what the answer is, but it just seems, and for the three of you, in clinical practice, you may be seeing an increase too.
All right, great question. Are we seeing an increase in these? Mandy, you're nodding your head.
I'd love to hear Wendy.
And the school counselor over here, Wendy, what's the school say?
Yeah, so I've worked in a few different states, and I think that We have a few new challenges as of late in our country as far as more social media influence, more screen time. We have socioeconomic factors. We have economic issues. Parents are having to work longer hours. You know, there are many different things that might influence or impact the way a child can regulate. I can't say with certainty that I've seen a definitive increase, but I do know that it's an ever-present challenge. And with the technological influences and what that invites for a child through their development, there is even more need for this kind of teaching and learning on the part of a parent and the partnership with a parent, with the school, as to how to address any issues that are coming up with the kiddo, especially in kindergarten, so that they can learn those regulation skills that are necessary to bring them up into middle childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That brings up a whole new question. There's two things I want to point to right there. Is one is the school, is it their job to teach emotional stuff? Is it social emotional things? And there is a whole program, this social emotional learning program, SEL, in the Anchorage School District, and perhaps I'll have one of the Anchorage School District come on and talk about why they developed that curriculum, what it's about. It's certainly not intended to replace the home teaching of these feelings and such. But the other thing you said is social media and electronics.
Technology.
And I think we are experiencing what we're going to experience and what I see in my practice and even with the adults is this dissociative behavior of playing video games, of getting online, of just immersing yourself into this alternative reality. You're not dealing with life. You're not dealing with emotions. You're just checking out. And I think, you know, to parent children, a lot of kids are having way too much screen time. Smartphones at 8, 9, 10 years old is not very uncommon. Hopefully we're having a shift in that. But I think that is one of the biggest keys of what we're seeing.
And keeping yourself in check as a parent.
Right.
Because if I'm on my screen all the time, then I'm not recognizing emotions. I'm not aware of my child's emotions.
You're not teaching.
I'm recognizing opportunities to connect and to teach. I'm not engaging my child in problem solving. I've certainly heard feedback from teachers, and particularly kindergarten teachers, that their behaviors are becoming increasingly more difficult. And I don't know the reason behind that, but my guess is it's technology related as well, that there's just more deficits there and with relation to emotional regulation and social skills.
Emotional dysregulation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what
Correct.
We're seeing from the screen time, the impulsivity. All right. 30 seconds. Anything take home points for social, for this sort of emotion coaching thing? What do you want parents to hear right at the end?
Yeah, I guess just that you have everything you need to be an emotion coach, that it's not something you have to go out and buy or get, but it's a mindset, and it takes value, and it takes time. It's simple, but it's not easy. And so stick with it, and I think we'll see the effect through the future generations.
Wendy?
Caring for yourself and learning about your own emotional regulation will help your family be successful emotionally and predict more success in life.
Good wrap. That's all the time we have for today. Appreciate you both for joining me. Be sure to tune in next week when Dr. Jay Butler comes back, and he will be joined by Julie McCormick for a conversation about the health effects of high blood pressure. Ammon Swenson handled the web editing for today's program, and Chris Bidelec was our audio engineer. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.